Wi-Fi.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my interview series where I talk to cool people about the cool things that they do. Our guest today grew up all around the outdoor industry and is now the owner of Indigo Creek Outfitters in Southern Oregon. He's wildly knowledgeable on all things Klamath and has been key in discovering what the new Klamath will be like for boaters. Our guest today is Will Volpert. Let's bring him to the stage. Hey, Will, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so excited today because as I've been reading all about the Klamath and kind of the ways that you've been involved, I've been kind of mind blown to know the different steps that have occurred to get us to where we are now on the river. And it's been fun reading about the new Klamath and what it is. So I'd love to start today by just hearing about why you love the Klamath and why you care about it so much.
Absolutely. Well, the Klamath is a river that starts in Oregon, but most people know of it in California. That's one of the larger river systems in California. But one of my favorite sections of the Klamath, at least previously, and even today, is on the Oregon side. And when we talk about the Klamath in Oregon, historically, we'd be talking about, from a whitewater perspective, the Hell's Corner stretch, which was sandwiched between John C. Boyle Dam and Kopko Reservoir, which both are now former dam, former reservoir.
Awesome.
And just like most of the folks that are probably in your audience and yourself, when you discover a river and spend a lot of time on it, especially as a guide when you're out there pretty consistently, it becomes more than, you know, just a place of work, but more of a personality or a friend that you get excited to return to. And so that's what I love about the Klamath. Is it's a place that I'm familiar with. I've spent a lot of time exploring and running commercial trips and private trips. And it's a place that's also going through substantial change. And that's exciting in its own world also.
And as I was reading about it, it seemed like you, so Indigo Creek, NOAA's, and Momentum were kind of integral in having outfitters have a voice within all of the big changes going on. Can you talk about what that looked like just with all the changes, how the outfitters stepped up?
Absolutely. So even though dam removal, when we think about the what's actually happened and the removing of the dams, it seems like it happened really quickly and in a short amount of time. It was something that had been discussed for years, decades, prior to the removal actually taking place. And so when the license for some of these dams came into the horizon, when folks realized that it was something that could potentially happen where the licenses for those dams was going to expire and either come up for renewal or be surrendered, folks started talking about what that would look like. And that started about 25 years ago. You know, there were environmental groups that were really interested in, you know, what the license surrender might potentially look like and how that could play out and how different stakeholders could be involved. Of course, recreation is a really small piece of that of that whole scope. And so we didn't enter the picture as the Upper Klamath Outfitters Association until a little bit later on in the process. Guys like Pete and Bart, who were operating up there prior to Indigo Creek, they had a voice, but they weren't always included at that table. And part of it was that the process for how the dams would come out kept evolving. You know, there were all sorts of negotiations, there were different stakeholders, there were different ideas of how it could happen. And nothing really solid seemed to take shape until the emergence of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. And the Klamath River Renewal Corporation exists as a nonprofit essentially to have the licenses of the dams transferred to that organization, for them to surrender the licenses and then complete dam removal, restoration work, and then KRRC will cease to exist. And that didn't happen until about 2016 or 2017. And once that organization was formed and there was a leader for this project, that's mm-hmm. when we really started advocating for a seat at the table. And so, as you mentioned, that was Momentum River Expeditions, Noah's River Adventures, and Indigo Creek Outfitters. And the three of us formed what's called the Upper Klamath Outfitters Association, which represents commercial rafting interest on the Upper Klamath. And between the three of us, we represent, at the time, about 95%+ of the total use on the Klamath. The Klamath, wow. Historically, the Upper Klamath historically was a really difficult river logistically for non-commercial boaters to visit because of the very challenging, time-consuming shuttle.
Oh, okay.
And so the primary way that the public would visit the Klamath was through commercial boating.
Now, what were the things that you and the other outfitters were fighting for? Like, what were the points that you brought up at the table?
Well, there are a few different points. And I should also mention that American Whitewater also was an advocate for recreation, like a huge advocate. And one of the interesting relationships that developed was that we knew the river really well, and they knew the bureaucratic process really well. Uh-huh. And a lot of our interests aligned. And so they became a hugely valuable partner in recreation for us as outfitters and obviously for non-commercial boaters. But the things that we advocated for were pretty basic. We wanted them to consider new recreational sites. And the way that we mapped those out was by determining where there were significant places of changes in gradient, which happens to typically be where dams are. So we were looking at new rec sites. We were looking for guaranteed flows for the year preceding drawdown. And so from a commercial standpoint, it was really important for us. We knew that we were going to have a year off. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be really important for us in order to survive this transition, kind of bridge the gap between 2023 and 2025. We were going to have a strong 2023 season. And that meant having consistent flows as we had in the past.
Okay.
And that was going to be a challenge because leading up to that, Pacific Core managed the flows. And Pacific Core was generating power on a very consistent daily basis through the Hell's Corner stretch.
Uh-huh.
And when they did license transfer, KRC took over ownership of the dams, and they didn't necessarily know how to operate the dams. And so the easiest thing that they could have done is just not done peaking flows. And that would have been the end of the 2023 rafting season for us.
Mm-hmm.
Another really important thing that we advocated for were flow studies. And we wanted to get a sense for what some of the new stretches would look like at anticipated flows post-dam removal. And that would give us the ability to start planning for 2025.
Gotcha. Correct me if I'm wrong, but all four dams came out in between 2023 and the end of 2024, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Wow. With the dams coming out, I feel like the rumors that I always hear about when dams come out is like it's super sedimentary, or like the sediment's all going, the water is kind of mucky. Did you see any of that when the dams came out?
There definitely are impacts from the dam removal that, you know, in the short term are kind of sometimes hard to look at or hard to stomach. But it also depends on where you are on the river. And so what I've been focusing on is the section that we were calling the New Klamath. And the New Klamath, the way I describe it, is from Keno Dam, which is a dam that still exists today, to Iron Gate Dam, which is no longer there. It's about 40 miles of river. And depending on where you are in that section, you're going to see different sediment loads. And so, for instance, on the John C. Boyle, if you're floating the Big Bend stretch or the Hell's Corner stretch, there was only one dam upstream of you that was taken out. It was a really small dam. It was John C. Boyle Dam. And the sediment load is very different there than it would be if you are below Iron Gate. And especially in this first year where all the four dams have been removed, there's still a huge amount of sediment up there mm-hmm. above in those reservoirs. And anytime we've seen a big spike in flows, there's a pretty heavy sediment load in the river downstream of Iron Gate. Now, hypothetically, just using common sense, you know, as that sediment moves downstream or leaves the reservoirs, that means that there's less sediment upstream to contribute in future high water events. So over time, you know, this should, you know, mitigate itself. It should, the clarity of the water should improve after each high water event. But
okay, that makes sense.
Recently, we had a high water event here where they released just about 9 or 10,000 CFS out of Keno, which was, I believe, the third highest release since the 90s.
Oh, wow.
And the amount of sediment passing Iron Gate, I was reading a report recently, was estimated at 200,000 tons per day for a short amount of time.
200,000 tons per day flushed away.
Yes.
For how many days in a row? That's crazy.
Like only 2 or 3 days.
I mean, even still, though, that's what, 600,000 tons? That's a lot. Yeah.
But keep in mind, these dams, some of these dams were here for over 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Iron Gate was a big dam. Copco 2, Copco 1, John C. Boyle. There's a lot of time to build up sediment behind those dams. And not only build up sediment, but destabilize what's now the riverbanks, because stuff wasn't growing, you know, in the reservoirs. So there's definitely, you know, sediment. At the same time, I've visited, you know, numerous sections of the river at different, at different times of the year, after storms or long after storms. And my observation landing at Access 1 a handful of times was that the water quality was better or the same as to what I had experienced prior to dam removal. And then as I moved downstream, you know, especially when you get down to the Iron Gate area, mm-hmm. there's noticeable, you know, runoff and sediment in the water there.
I know that a big reason for the dam removal was for the indigenous tribes and getting salmon back into the river. Have you noticed fish coming back? I don't know. I don't think it's fish season right now, but have you noticed?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see, the first time that I got out on the New Klamath after all the dams had been removed was toward the end of October. And that was right after some of the first fish had been sighted upstream of the dams.
Wow.
And on that particular trip, I didn't see any salmon moving upstream. But shortly after, we got out in November a handful of times, and in December, there were fish moving upstream.
Like, that's amazing.
We saw them in what used to be Copco Valley. They're kind of shooting through there because there was no tree cover or anything. I saw some in Ward's Canyon or Kickachecky Reach, which was it's pretty wild. You know, you're floating downstream, you're running some new whitewater essentially. Significant whitewater too. In that section, class four, it's new. We've been in there a handful of times, so we kind of know where we should be going, but still read and run, a lot of read and run. And it's fun, whitewater, but you're paying attention. And I saw something splash next to my oar. I was kind of in a tight spot where I'm managing my oars, and I went to ship my left oar and a big splash happened right off the oar. And it kind of surprised me, and I looked down, got totally distracted, and there's this big salmon moving alongside of the raft.
And
I totally lost track of what was going on and smashed into a big rock and got smacked. But then after Ward's Canyon, there's some significant tributaries that come into the river, and so there's Camp Creek and Jenny Creek and Fall Creek. And of course, the fish are, you know, piling up at the mouths of those creeks also. And they're definitely there, you know.
Okay, well, that's so exciting.
Yep, it's pretty cool. So I haven't been down there in the last month or so. I don't think I'd see fish right now.
Uh-huh.
But I guess one other thing I'd mention about the fish and the fish are coming back. Definitely saw fish. It's not fake. It's not fake news that there's fish up there. We're floating through Ward's Canyon, Kickachucky Reach, and this was at the end of December. And there's fish carcasses, you know, along the river at this point. And I hadn't ever actually stopped and like taken a breather in that stretch for the most part. Like, I'm sure we'd stop and like set safety or be safe for boats coming downstream.
Just because it's so continuous.
Continuous, and it's a really long stretch right now. That not Ward's Canyon itself, but to actually see Ward's Canyon or Kickachucky, you have to run about 15 miles of river right now because there's some new access points that haven't been developed. And so you're motoring, you know, and you're doing it. And we've been out there in the winter. And so it's cold and you're like, downstream. And so just because of that, I just really hadn't stopped to really spend time looking around. There's also some cultural stuff to be aware of, you know, so we're not getting out of the boats and like walking around yet. But just like hanging out in the netty and like soaking up the surrounding area. And we did. We pulled over in the netty and not for safety, just to hang out and look around and soaking up the sun. And a buddy of mine in the boat goes, "Hey, there's a bear there." And there's a black bear across the river from us looking down at the boats. And I don't know why I was so surprised to see this bear, but it occurred to me that just because people hadn't been in the canyon in so long, 100 years, you know, where people really haven't been like walking up and down the canyon at all. 100 years had been dewatered in there. There hadn't really been boats in for, except for a handful of us. Salmon hadn't been in the river in that section for 100 years. The bear was probably in there, you know, eating carcasses. And it occurred to me that it was probably the first bear sighting in 100 years by a, you know, obviously bear had been in there, but people actually seeing bear. The way that the bear was framed in the canyon, there's these beautiful basalt, it's columnar basalt canyon walls.
Yeah, I bet we can pull up a picture of it actually.
It was incredible. And I can't help but believe that the bear was there because the salmon were there. And so when we talk about the return of salmon and, you know, things like being reestablished, it's always more than, you know, just one small piece. You know, there's normally a domino effect.
Yeah, that's a really, I love that. Well, and let's take a peek at the map just so we can kind of see where you're talking about. And for the listeners, I'll put this map in the show notes so you can find it. But for those of you watching, okay, it's the green section, right?
Yeah, go into the green there. So if you...
I'm so technically challenged. Thank you for your cooperation. Okay, green, here we are.
Any of those green points are going to have some pictures on them.
I'll even just pull up the pictures that you sent. This is the canyon, yeah?
Yeah, that's the canyon right there. And so this section was 100% dewatered. So a lot of people think about dam removal and they associate dams with reservoirs, which is true. There are reservoirs behind dams. But the way that you generate power is by typically creating some sort of elevation change. They call it head. I'm not a dam engineer, but I've learned a couple of things about dams recently. And when you're producing electrical power, you need a change in elevation to run the water through the turbines to create electricity. And there's a couple ways you can do that. One is you can have the powerhouse right at the base of the dam. And at COPCO 1, that was the case. And at COPCO 2, which was shortly downstream of COPCO 1, COPCO 2 dam obviously blocked the river. And then they took the whole river and they put it in a canal. And they ran that canal along the river for approximately 3 miles.
Oh, wow.
And kept the canal, you know, at a at about the same elevation as it started, with a slight drop. And then of course the river drops, and so that's how you get the difference in elevation. You have the canal here and the river down here. And then they had the powerhouse, you know, 3 miles downstream of the dam. And they ran the water through the powerhouse and created electricity, and then the water's back in the river. But what that meant was that there was a 3 mile stretch that was 100% dewatered.
Wow.
And that's what Kickachecky Reach, I keep calling it Kickachecky or Ward's Canyon. Kickachecky is the Shasta Indian Nation name for this section. Ward's Canyon is the name of a ranch that historically was in Copco Valley, and it was owned and managed by Kitty Ward. And some folks call it Ward's Canyon for that.
Okay, I see. Well, and I just want to double check one thing. It said we had Sean wrote in and said that it wasn't displaying on their end. So I just want to be sure that the pictures, they get to see them. Sean, give me just a thumbs up if you see them, or a thumbs down if you don't. I see them, but if you don't see them, that's okay. We'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes, but that's insane that it was so dewatered. And I really love that you shared about the bear, because it is such a domino effect. Oh, okay. Yeah. So we didn't get the pictures up. Honestly, technical difficulties are just a part of life. So we're going to move past them, but I'll make sure that the listeners have a way to see the pictures. Thank you, everyone in the comments, for letting us know that it's not showing up. But all right,
I'll be really descriptive with my words.
Yes,
I'll paint a picture for you.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, let's kind of talk about rafting and boating and what it's going to look like on this river. You mentioned some access points that weren't developed yet, but what does access look like on the river now?
Well, on the river now, it's kind of challenging because there's still some restoration work taking place. There's some road work taking place. There's quite a few closures right now to be aware of. For instance, Pioneer Park West, which is going to be the put in for the Big Bend stretch, that's currently closed to the public. They're developing that access point. Should be open by May 15th.
Oh, cool.
Spring Island, that's the typical put-in for the Hell's Corner stretch. It could also be the takeout for the Big Bend stretch. It's currently closed. Should be open by May 15th. My guess is it opens a little bit earlier than that, potentially late March or April.
But pretty soon.
Currently closed. Now, Spring Island is an existing access point.
Okay.
So it was there before dam removal. The reason it's closed is because the access road to it is vital for restoration work that's taking place on the old canal.
Uh-huh.
So they removed the whole canal that used to run from John C. Boyle Dam to the John C. Boyle Powerhouse. And they removed the canal. They're getting rid of they're decommissioning the access road. And to do that, they're using a lot of heavy trucks, dump trucks, to haul stuff out of there. And the result of that was that they closed the access road down to the public, just because there's so much construction happening there.
Okay.
You can get into Frayne Ranch. Frayne Ranch, is accessed by the topsy grade. Historically, really bad road, really rough road. You don't want to be in there when it's wet. It's wet right now. It's clay, slicker than snot. So you're not going to probably get in to Frayne Ranch today. Maybe when things dry up, you'll use that. State lines open. That's historically the end of the Hell's Corner stretch.
Mm-hmm.
That one's open. Access 6 is open. It's gated and locked right now, but you can stop at Access 6. We were there just 2 weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
And, we ran big Highway 66 all the way to Access 6. And we just carried our boats up to the road, and that's how we utilize that access point. Access 1 is open. So Access 1 historically didn't get a whole lot of use. It would sometimes be in the Copco reservoir, depending on the elevation of the reservoir. It was either in the reservoir or just barely run of river. Access 1 prior to dam removal was an alternative takeout folks would use to extend their Hell's Corner trip. But it only really added 5 miles of class 1 and 2. So okay. It wasn't frequently used. Today it's getting used more frequently because it's the only put in currently if you want to run through Ward's Canyon, Kickachecky.
I see. So if you put in there, do you have those 5 miles of kind of like warm up and then you drop into the canyon?
If you put in at access one, the 5 miles I spoke of previously was upstream of that, but it's still class 1 and 2 downstream for about 5 miles because you're floating through the old Copco Lake.
Gotcha. So
that's the first, that's one of the coolest places to see run of river through an old reservoir footprint. And it's really unique. It's different. You know, it looks different than, you know, what we typically see because it is an old reservoir footprint. It's a big reservoir. The river, for the most part, is following what we believe is the native channel, with the exception of a couple locations. But that's why you'd use Access 1 today. And Access 1 is open.
Great.
There is a planned access point at the head of Ward's Canyon. The idea with that.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, the idea with that access point, it's closed right now, but the idea with that access point, it's going to be called Grizzly Hill, is that there's going to be folks who want to see float through the old reservoir footprint through Copco Lake. We think that that might be like a great fishing trip someday, maybe even on a drift boat. But there needs to be an access point before that change in gradient, because it's only, you know, it's I think it's 20 feet per mile or so through Copco Valley. But when you get into Ward's, it's significantly steeper. And all of a sudden there are real class 4 and 4+ rapids. So the idea was that to kind of maximize use, to give as much of the public an opportunity to see the restoration work as possible, you'd need an access point there. I really believe that the number one way people are going to see the Klamath River post dam removal is probably through recreation. And that was an important component when we started talking about access points and access point development, why it was important for future restoration projects is, you know, if folks can't actually see what's happening, then how will they perceive other projects that are similar to this in the future? And so building those access points, planning those access points was an important part of that. So there'll be an access point put in at the head of Ward's Canyon. And then similarly, there'll be an access point put in at an existing site at Fall Creek. And Fall Creek is what would be the end of the Ward's Canyon, Kickachecky Reach. One of the cool things about those two access points, especially from a non-commercial boater standpoint, is that they're only 3 miles apart. And these access points are situated and planned in such a way where it's going to be really easy to lap Ward's Canyon.
Yes.
additionally, there's plans for like bike parking, so you can even bike do a bike shuttle.
Oh, cool.
Shasta Indian Nation is going to be managing those access points.
Awesome.
And they're talking about doing, it's still like in the planning phases, but they're talking about doing a developed trail system. So that you can actually hike from access point to access point, which would give you a really cool perspective of looking down into the canyon.
Oh, yeah.
And having an overlook. It's an area of cultural significance for Shasta Indian Nation. And so they're also going to have some areas that aren't open to the public. But from what I understand in the conversations that we've had with some of their folks is that they are eager to have people experience this place once they have their infrastructure developed. So it's something that they're planning for. And they're going to do it in a way that is planned and managed and protects the resource.
That sounds so awesome and exciting. So cool to bring so many people in. That's amazing with the biking and the hiking and then, yeah, rafting or kayaking.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of different ways that you can experience the new Klamath. I was going to just mention that the last access point today on the new Klamath is at Iron Gate. And that that's an improved access point. So it was something that was there before. It's open today. They made some improvements to it. And today, if you want to float through Ward's Canyon, what you're going to do is you're going to launch from Access 1, and you're going to take out at Iron Gate, most likely.
That's awesome.
Something that KRC's talked to me a little bit about is that, you know, we put out this map, and we're providing all this information about how, you know, cool this is. It's real whitewater in Ward's Canyon, and it could catch you off guard if you're floating through Copco Valley, and it's Class 1 and Class 2. And all of a sudden, there's an abrupt change in the character of the river. And there's not really any escape routes right now. You know, like mm-hmm. if you're over your head, there aren't really any good ways to get out of there without those new access points developed. Mm-hmm. And so if someone out there is thinking about doing this trip, make sure that you are someone who can read and run, you know, Class 4 and mm-hmm. is comfortable with the canyon that is very dynamic right now. You know, it's seeing water for the first time in 100 years. Mm-hmm. There's sediment and debris floating into that canyon from upstream reservoirs. So there's a risk management component to this that I think is really important folks really think about.
I really appreciate that disclaimer, and I'm hoping you can clarify also the way that the flow is working right now. So you've mentioned a dam upstream. So is it still kind of dam release from the upstream dam, or is it now based on rain melt, or what can we expect with flows, and where can we find flow information?
4 dams were taken out on the Klamath, but the Klamath is not a free flowing river.
Okay.
Which is confusing because there's a lot of media saying that the Klamath is free flowing, but it's not. There's still 2 dams upstream. The one that's controlling the flow that we see is Keno.
Okay.
And the other dam is Upper Klamath Lake, or the Link River Dam. So Keno is Bureau of Reclamation, and okay. And they're controlling the flow, and which is and I only mention that because it's a different organization entity than the folks who were controlling the flow previously, which was Pacific Corps.
Gotcha.
And so there's been a little bit of a learning curve here to develop a relationship with Bureau of Reclamation. And the latest that I've heard is that they are going to put out somewhat of a flow schedule, which is
great.
Super important because we had a good relationship with Pacific Corps, and they had something on their website that was like, hey, here's what the flows are going to be for the next 7 days. And of course, with them, it was really precise because they were doing it to make money. They're generating flows. They knew exactly what their flow schedule was going to be. And with the Bureau of Reclamation, it's a little bit different, and they're adjusting as well. There are tributaries that come in downstream of Keno Dam.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer months, when things dry up, they don't hardly contribute anything. But this time of year, they do. So like Jenny Creek could easily pump in 1,000 cubic feet per second. Same with Camp Creek. There's Fall Creek, Shovel Creek. There's kind of a unique spring between Keno and Spring Island. And I think that we're going to really see what that spring contributes when we get into the dry season.
Okay.
My estimate is that it's 150 to 200 CFS. And that's
per when?
For, I think, any day.
Oh, like it'll be a consistent 150, yeah. 200. Okay, got it.
That spring contributes just below the former John C. Boyle Dam site. And it's important to know that because if people are thinking about running the Big Bend stretch, which is going to have the best whitewater on the entire Klamath, it's higher up in the drainage. So it's going to have the least amount of water.
Compared
to all the other stretches downstream of it. That extra 150 to 200 is a big deal up there because during the summer months, they might only release 700 or 800 out of Keno, but then at Spring Island, you know, you'll see that bump. There's gauges at Keno, Spring Island, and at Iron Gate.
Okay, great.
And you can find those. You can find them. USGS has them.
Yeah.
I've got a page on our site it's a blog post that's titled Flows on the Klamath, and it aggregates all of them. So they're all just Great. On one page, so you can kind of see, you know, exactly what's happening. I think it's kind of fun to see, like, oh, up here in the drainage, it's doing this, and then downstream it's doing this. And you can see, you know, how fast the water's traveling also.
That is really cool.
If you're kind of nerdy like me, it's kind of fun to see what's going on.
I've been getting really into gauges and looking them up. I feel like I'm like, the first thing I do when I look up is look at like three different rivers nearby. And I'm like, okay, what are they all at? Okay, yeah. What's the plan? With the Klamath and the whitewater and the commercial rafting, kind of all of the things together, you mentioned the Big Bend stretch and Ward Canyon stretch are going to be the best whitewater. Can you just speak a little bit about the characteristic of the water? Is it more creaking? Is it more big water? Or what can we expect with that for those who don't know?
Continuous is definitely a word that comes to mind. The rapids are really long. They feed into each other on those stretches. They're relatively steep. And I think that the majority of the time that people are up there, it is going to feel low volume, maybe not totally a creaking style, but, you know, low volume, technical river character for sure.
Okay, cool.
The makeup of a lot of these rapids, they formed because of, we're cutting through the Cascade Mountains, a lot of volcanic activity.
Okay.
So a lot of places that I would say no swim zone, you know, short or, you know, steep, fast, shallow, mm-hmm. sharp volcanic rock.
Okay. My favorite.
but great rapids, really fun rapids, long rapids. That's what the Upper Klamath was known for, was like just these really long, steep rapids with multiple moves. And as a commercial guide, you'd be up there, you know, we were up there almost every day. And the flow was exactly the same during the summer. That was like the beautiful thing about it was, if someone called us in February and said, I want to go rafting on the Upper Klamath at the end of August, we knew it was going to be 1700 CFS.
Oh, of course.
Because of the hydro paddle. And as a guide, you get really good at figuring out little tricks. You know, it's fun to read and run. And like, that's one of the things that I love about running rivers is
me too,
you know, coming around the corner and having to figure it out. But there's also something really special about getting to know a run so well that you're just like perfectly in tune with it. You know, every single day it's the same flow. I know I can put my right tube, you know, on this rock and it's going to like pivot me just perfectly. I'll call forward two here. And you know, it's not, I think for a lot of folks, that's not what we look for in boating, but from a commercial perspective, it was pretty nice. And that's different now. You know, we're going to see changes in flow, you know, day to day down there.
Sean asked a really great question. He just said, will that stretch feel like the Upper Klamath felt, or will it be a different feel?
Big Bend stretch will feel like the Upper Klamath, but it's more difficult.
Okay.
When I say the Upper Klamath, I mean the Hell's Corner stretch. And I think that's what most people refer to when they're comparing. But the Hell's Corner stretch, you know, is probably class four at certain flows, four plus, and Big Bend is similar to the more difficult rapids on Hell's Corner.
Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. This honestly makes me really excited to come and try the Klamath. And I also think it's cool that there are so many new stretches and changes. And I agree with you, reading and running, I think, is the most fun part of whitewater. Indigo Creek is going to offer a bunch of different trips on this new river, new Klamath. Can you speak a little bit about like what you're excited for this upcoming 2025 season?
I think what I'm most excited for is it's given us a great opportunity to kind of like reset and re-examine how we want to, the trips that we want to run up there that we think are going to do well. Whereas in the past for us, we only ran day trips up there.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm most excited about for this coming year is the ability to run overnight trips. And we can do it. We're going to do it in a couple different ways. We're going to run an overnight trip that's just the Hell's Corner stretch, which is what we used to do as a day trip. But our intention with that trip is to really take our time. The flows are going to be a lot less typically, especially in the summer months, than they were previously. So it's going to be a little bit slower paced. We'll camp in the middle of Hell's Corner. It's going to give folks an opportunity to really take their time and see what a restored section of river looks like. And on that section, it was not under a reservoir. You know, we were up there all the time, but there are some differences still with the
interesting
coming out. The biggest one from a logistical standpoint is that previously, if you were running an overnight trip on the Hell's Corner stretch, talked about the flows being the same every day. Those were peaking flows. And so there was an artificial peaking flow every day at 10:30 in the morning where they'd go from 400 CFS to 1700.
Wow.
They'd hold it there for a few hours and they'd drop it down to 400 CFS. And what that meant was that if you were at the put in, you would see that peaking flow sometime between 10:30 and 11 in the morning. But if you were 7 miles downstream, 8 miles downstream, you might not see that peaking flow until an hour or two later in the day.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So it was, for us, it was challenging to figure out how to run overnight trips there, because the way I like to run overnight trips is you float to camp, you do your camp thing, you wake up in the morning, you break down camp, you get in the boats and you go downstream. Kind of how we all overnight trips. But with the artificial peaking flow and the artificial low flow, you couldn't just wake up and put on, because there wasn't enough water in the river.
Okay. Yep. And so would your boats like be beached?
Oh yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. So I mean, there's ways you could creatively, you know, make things up in the morning to do.
Yeah.
Until the flows came. But you know, that's what I'm excited about, is you wake up, get on the water, and get to continue downstream.
From a private boat perspective, do you know what permitting looks like and an ability for private boaters to do that same overnight stretch and campsites? Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So the Hell's Corner stretch historically was permitted. I mean, we've got a commercial permit on the Upper Klamath, on the Wild and Scenic stretch. So Spring Island to State Line. There was a permit system for non-commercial also. It was similar to the Illinois, where it was self-issued.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot of enforcement on that. So I know that there are non-commercial folks launching from Frayne Ranch who didn't have an opportunity to pick up a permit at Spring Island because it doesn't make sense logistically. And running trips. I think that it's probably going to be fairly similar to that in 2025, where if you're non-commercial, you can kind of run trips, you know, when you want, and you can launch from Spring Island or Frayne Ranch or Moonshine Falls is another access point that I didn't talk about, but that's going to be an important one also. And so from a non-commercial standpoint, I think that you should expect in 2025 to have a really easy time as when it comes to like permit stuff. I don't think that's going to be a challenge. I think that what will be a challenge is getting to know the river where you're comfortable running a heavy oar boat, or not even a heavy oar boat, but just an oar boat with your overnight stuff at flows that are greatly reduced compared to what they were previously. I think that that's going to be the biggest barrier for folks. There are camps. There's, you know, quite a few camps actually on the Hell's Corner stretch. People don't necessarily think that there are a lot of camps up there because historically there wasn't a lot of overnight use. But when you're someone like myself who's all of a sudden looking at how you're going to run camping trips there, all of a sudden you discover a lot of places that and so we've started, on our map, we've got a handful of places located. Bart Baldwin's done an inventory of camps, potential camps on that area. He sent me that list and I could not believe how many camps there were.
Wow. Okay. That's so exciting.
Yep. Now, one thing is that once you get below State Line, there are no camps.
Okay.
So between State Line and Iron Gate, you know, the lower part of the New Klamath, there are no camping opportunities. There's no public land.
Okay. Well, and in fact, that kind of brings me into, we had someone write in and he asked, I've not run the Klamath before, but plan to get there this summer. And oh, here, look, I can even just show it. Wow. Cool. Day runs on the upper and multi-day lower down. I've heard about closures for indigenous ceremonies, any specific time of year to avoid. So I think that kind of ties in with that, if you can speak to that at all.
Sure. So you might, Bryson might also, I think Bryson's referencing some of the ceremonies that take place on what we call like the middle or lower Klamath down in the Happy Camp area, which is quite a ways downstream of the New Klamath. Those ceremonies typically take place in the second half of July and in August. Forest Service will put out a notice for, you know, when those closures are. Sometimes the closures are just you're not allowed to use this access point. Sometimes it's you can't stop on the right bank for from here to here. Sometimes it's please don't float through this section. I don't know those dates off the top of my head.
No worries.
And the Forest Service won't put those dates out for at least another couple of months, most likely. My understanding is it actually ties, some of the ceremonies tie in with the moon calendar. And so if you go back and look at when the ceremonies were previously, you might be able to find a correlation. I don't guess though.
Fair.
My understanding also is that Shasta Indian Nation is planning on a ceremony sometime this spring, but we don't have dates for that yet. But again, we don't know if that's, you know, a full closure for the river or the closure of an access point. Yeah. It's something that, you know, will be public knowledge, hopefully sometime in the near future.
Okay, and, cool.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when we, as river runners, as people who visit rivers, you know, we're used to working with different land use managers or, you know, different stakeholders. And I think something I would really like to stress is that Klamath is new for us. You know, we're getting out there. It's new for Shasta Indian Nation to have, to be looking at a land transfer like this, where they're going to have management over a certain section of river and land potentially. And it's really important that we start off on the right foot and have open communication and have a good relationship with each other, you know, between stakeholders, or between tribes, between boaters, recreational river runners, and for the sake of the future access to some of these places, we need to be aware of what different desires are.
Yeah, I really appreciate that disclaimer. I think that's really good for everyone to hear. And honestly, I think this has just been so jam-packed with such helpful information for ways to use the Klamath, love the Klamath, get to know it better. And so I really, really appreciate it. Before we close out, is there anything else you want to say about the Klamath?
You know, the Klamath is going through a change right now, and the whole area is going through a change. I think that for a lot of people, the dam removal was like the biggest victory of their lives. And for some people, this is a really challenging time for some people who like live by the river and are experiencing impacts that are detrimental to their everyday life. And I think that just being aware of these different perspectives is an important thing. And also being aware that the Klamath is in a state of change, and what we know today isn't necessarily going to be true, you know, in July. And we talk about reading and running rivers all the time. And on this river, in this situation, we're kind of read and running, you know, the situation with the Klamath and, you know, how we're going to operate responsibly up there. So I'd just encourage other folks to kind of keep an open mind and be on your toes. And especially if you get out there in the near future, recognize that it's a area that might have different hazards in it than what we're used to, for rivers that have compared to rivers that have been like free flowing and not having significant dam removals in the last year.
Awesome. Wow. Really well said. And yeah, thanks to all of the commenters today who helped keep us in line with technical difficulties and asked really great questions. So thanks so much for your time, Will. That was really great to hear everything.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you.